Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Seeking What They Sought, a conversation on Seventh-day Adventism. In today's episode, we react to a video released a couple weeks ago, sponsored by the General Conference called Unity Hashtag GCAC18. We spend a little bit of time talking gut reactions, we dive deep into the politics behind the video, and hopefully try and come to a healthy conclusion. So thanks again for being with us today. Welcome to the party. Hey guys, also before we get started, just wanted to pause for a sec and acknowledge a couple things. The first thing is, just want to thank you, all of us, we want to thank you so much for taking the time to listen to our podcast. This is a super new adventure for us, and so far it's been a lot of fun. So thank you so much for taking the time to listen and to leave reviews. And speaking of reviews, would you actually pause for a moment and leave us a review if you like what you've heard? Would you leave us a review? It actually really helps us see how we're doing. The feedback is super, super helpful. So we really, really appreciate it. The second thing is, we actually recognize that we had mentioned in our very first episode that we were going to talk about tradition and how tradition as it relates to the Adventist Church and things like that. And we actually did not talk about tradition, if you have listened to our second episode. And the reason for that was because we saw some of the current events happening in the church, and we said, man, we need to jump on top of this and talk about it while it's still relevant. So that's kind of the goal and the idea and the dream behind the podcast, is to hit on things while they're still fresh. So thank you so much for your patience. With that said, we don't actually intend to only talk about church politics on this podcast. We have a huge range of topics we're super excited to dive into, and tradition is definitely one of them. So we're going to be hitting on that one in the near future. So stay tuned for that. All right. Once again, thank you so much for listening to us, and let's dive right into our conversation about this Unity video. All right, guys, how you doing today, Sean? Sean, how are you? What,
you know, I'm okay. About a week away from Christmas break, which for teachers is that moment in time where you're like, oh, I can finally catch my breath, live.
Yeah, for the rest of us that don't get, you know, a summer break, a Christmas break, Thanksgiving break, you know, days off. All that stuff. Yeah, for the rest of us, you know, we're just working our butts off.
The rest,
you know,
of us hardworking folks.
All of us pastors,
world.
You know, yeah. Anthony and I, who
that one day a week is tough.
We work all week and then we work Saturday.
I mean, if we're
too,
if we're gonna go there, know. Jesse, if we're gonna go with the misconceptions, let's just dive in.
You invited this upon us.
Well, no, year. Sean, it's mostly just you. Like, it's I respect all other teachers except for you. So Anthony, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm kind of, it's been cold in California. And when I say
what,
cold,
it's been like 70. Like,
yeah.
Is that cold for you?
I mean, mid-60s.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. I'm so sorry right now. No, I'm so sorry.
I mean, I'm from Canada, so like, it's not really cold, but this is a thing that I believe. I don't really believe in you're from X place, so therefore cold doesn't feel cold. I don't think that's a thing. I think that science says something's cold, then therefore it's cold. So. And I also feel like cold is relative.
Science doesn't say that 60 degrees is cold.
I feel like cold is relative. So if you're in a place that's warm, when, you know, it's a little cooler than the norm is, then you're going to feel a little chilly. So it's been like 65 the past few days, and it's been a little chilly. I've been wearing a sweater. I'm wearing a cardigan right now in my house.
So anyways, we're one of the first things we want to do today is, there's a video that has come out, came out a couple weeks ago. And it's this video that was done by lay people, right?
Yeah.
And so we're going to do a new segment. It's called Reaction Time. So
Reaction Time.
Yeah. So again, this video is recorded, and if you, we're going to put a link in the bio. So if you want to go see it, link in the show notes, then go check it out. You want to see this video. So in essence, it was created by lay people, right? So lay people, meaning people that aren't professional, paid by the conference or the organization type people. Regular church members created this video. And what's interesting is that the General Conference has, in essence, endorsed it. They've shared it on their main website and their pages. And so this is, and Ted Wilson shared it. So this has become an endorsed thing by the General Conference. And if you go watch it, it's interesting. We're going to ask about what is our gut reaction to this. Can I just share what my gut reaction is to this?
Yeah. What's your gut reaction?
This is terrible. Now I know we're going to talk through this in a more measured way later, but just my first gut level reaction is, wow, like this, what is this?
Yeah.
That's what it comes down to. What did you feel, Anthony? Did you feel different than I did?
No, I think I watched it and I think I was just I was like, okay, well, my first feeling when I watched it, I was like, this feels like something from like The Hunger Games or like Red out of 1984. Like it feels kind of propaganda-y. That was just sort of my gut reaction. And then I sort of asked afterwards, like, I wonder what their goal and intention was behind this. But yeah, my first reaction was just like, this is weird. This is a weird thing.
Well, yeah. if you've seen it, it has 903 likes at this point on YouTube, at least, and 2,700 dislikes. So obviously we're not the only ones who have felt this way. And I don't think any of us are trying to speak negatively about the people in it, but rather just the whole video just felt so, just like coercive and manipulative, really. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, we'll talk more about this later, I think, but like it just felt manipulative. But Sean, what was your gut reaction?
I mean, it's been interesting for me to talk to others about it. I did not react strongly against it, but I didn't find it very interesting or engaging. Mm-hmm. You know, I found it a little bit unsettling. It didn't make me feel very comfortable. Mm-hmm. I didn't necessarily agree with everything that was said in the video. But I also did not have as strong of a reaction as some have had. I've seen people on social media basically saying this is very cultish. Yeah. And you know, I kind of understand.
It didn't feel cultish. It felt misguided. That's what it felt like to me.
Mm. Yeah.
I don't know if that's fair.
And I had the similar thought in my head, Anthony, is, you know, what was their purpose for this?
Yeah.
What is the goal of it? Right. And I'd be very interested to talk to people about that, especially those that created it. Because from what I've seen, at least, and I think it's fair to say that they did not get the result they wanted.
Yeah.
Or maybe at least that's maybe it is. But yeah. I highly doubt that.
This seems to be kind of in a long line of things that people have been trying to do, you know, like the general conference when they got together for the annual council recently, they all dressed in like 1800s era clothing, kind of like you know, the 1840s, you know, and like that was supposed to be going back to our roots. And then, you know, everyone who's brown is like, yeah, that's not what black people are wearing. You know, that,
we were all literally in the movie Roots during that time.
Yeah. And I mean, like, that's the saddest part, but it just felt out of touch. It felt like it wasn't really. And this video, even though it wasn't created by the general conference, it had a similar feeling to me. It just felt out of touch. It felt like, you know, are you really in tune? There's some of the statements in there, just like there's a statement in there that says, you know, we had to make a really hard decision.
Yeah.
What do you do when your family decides to go a different way than the rest of the family decide? Like that type of feeling. Mm-hmm. And then they're like, so we made a hard decision and some of us are having a hard time with that decision. It's just like, that just felt condescending.
Yeah.
You know, and again, like I'm not saying that they intended it to be. I don't get the sense that they meant it to be condescending. It just felt condescending. And you're sitting there like, oh, like if some of us don't agree with you, like we're the ones who are having a hard time. You know, like that's what it felt like.
Yeah, I actually showed it. So I actually showed it to the youth group the other day, maybe a couple weekends ago on Friday. And I didn't give my opinion about it or like how I felt. I just sort of showed it. And then I had like some discussion questions and had them break up into groups. And I think the first question I had was similar. It was like, how does this make you feel when you watch it? Like I just wanted to have their honest opinions without me like interjecting my own ideas. And it was so interesting. And a lot of them hadn't seen it, you know, so they're all like basically the majority of what came back from them was it feels weird. It feels like there's a lot of repetition, feels sort of like propaganda, just feels unsettling, just felt weird. So it was interesting to hear from a bunch of high school students where they were at with it, just never having seen it before, watching it for the first time. It was just a little bit weird for them.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that was a similar reaction for a lot of people. It just felt weird. But I mean, I think, you know, we can react to this all day long, but I think it's important for us to actually kind of explore, you know, why in the world this type of thing comes out. I know that maybe the three of us are kind of like, we kind of know stuff because we're all Adventist professionals. So, you know, it's like kind of our job to know a little bit, but we probably need to talk more about that.
Yeah. Well, I just wanted to sort of dig for a minute and sort of hit on what you had said, Sean. Like, what do you think they're trying to communicate? What do we feel like is their argument, their message that they're trying to get at? Like, what are they trying to convey? What do you guys think?
I don't know. It seems to me like they're in essence trying to convey this message that, you know, if you're out of compliance, like, we want you to come back. Like, we, you know, but there's so much message about family, that we're a worldwide family, that, you know, like, the family voted. And so, you know, like, we want you to come back. It's, I don't know. Like, I think they communicated what they wanted to. Again, that's a huge judgment call. Maybe I can't make that, but it feels like they communicated what they wanted to. I don't know.
Yeah. Sean, what do you think?
Yeah. I mean, the main thing I got from it was the decision has been made, and it's up to you now where you're going to fall on which side. It almost feels, even though they're calling for unity, I almost got the idea that the line has been drawn, make a decision where you're going to land, and just understand that if you choose to go against, that's it, you know, and maybe that's reading too far into it. I don't know.
There's a phrase in there where they talk about, you know, be informed, right?
Right.
And someone had a comment on Facebook, a friend of ours that had a comment on Facebook who was like, yeah, be informed, but once you're informed, don't disagree.
Right.
You know, it's like that. You're right, Sean. I don't think I really realized that, but once you said that, it was so true that it's like, it felt like, yeah, the decision's already made. That's it. You know, good luck. There is no other way.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. And here's the thing. I mean, how many views does this thing have, Jesse? Did you check
75,000 approximately.
Okay. And the thing is, with that being said, if you haven't watched it yet, I would highly, and I think all of us would say, watch it before you listen to this. I don't know if this is going to make much sense. Our reactions and going deeper into what was said. So I would say pause what you're listening to and just, there's probably going to be a link in the description below or wherever it is, and just go and watch the video at least once, and then be willing to listen to what we're saying. I felt like we had to say that.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Why don't we talk about, we have another segment. We're going to be doing segments more often. We have another segment. It's called The Enlightenment. So why don't we go into that?
This is the Enlightenment. It's Enlightenment time. It's time for us to enlighten with a little bit of knowledge that we have in our brains. That's all I got.
So this whole segment is about, we're not going to take sides. We don't want to do that at all. We want to be impartial and just say, hey, this is what's happening, so that we can all be educated on this. So why don't we start out with like current, where we're at and why we're here. And if you don't mind, I might just start with this, that, you know, the main idea that got us to where we're at is just this whole idea of unity and the fact that there are entities that are out of compliance. So there are several entities, a few unions and a couple conferences that are out of compliance with the voted idea of the fact that you can't ordain women to be pastors. Right. Mm-hmm. And because of that, people are, you know, out of compliance because there are conferences and unions ordaining women as pastors. So that's this whole idea, is like when we're talking about unity, what's interesting is not unity of belief. It's not unity of like, we all believe in Jesus. It's unity about this one specific thing. And again, not taking sides, but that's the reality of it at this point, is that's what it is about. It's about women's ordination. And because of that, when people are in essence inviting people back into compliance, it's inviting these entities back into compliance with this voted, it was voted in 2015 at the General Conference in session, which is a bunch of delegates that come from all over the world. And they came to, I believe it was San Antonio, and there was a vote taken on whether we were going to allow conferences or divisions or different entities within our organizations to ordain women, or to at least choose whether they ordain women.
Yeah.
And it was voted down. And because of that,
so we have to pause there, because that's a nuance, because many might say the vote in 2015 was about women's ordination, when that's not really true. The vote was more along the lines of, are we going to allow individual divisions to make the decision whether or not they will ordain women or not?
Yeah. And so just to recognize this, that then what is being said there is that parts of the countries and different things, different divisions, are in essence saying, no, you don't get to choose based on culture.
Right.
Is what's being said. And so that, I mean, that's a tough thing for a lot of people to come to grips with. But also at the same time, it felt like a huge victory to a large portion of the Adventist church saying, hey, we're all
united.
Trying to be compliant. Yeah, we're all united in this.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, I think it's had the opposite effect. So when we talk about this, we're talking about unity. What's at stake now is what do we do to the people that are out of compliance, to the entities that are out of compliance. So there's a document that's gone out saying that, you know, the entity closest, we talked about this a little bit last episode, entity closest to the non-compliant entity is supposed to deal with the issue. So if it's a union, the division has to deal with it. Well, if that doesn't happen, then the General Conference has, in essence, three options available to it.
Right,
and
right.
They're all kind of steps. The first option is a warning. Right. So they're going to say, hey, we're warning you, you're out of compliance. And then there's time that's taken to figure out if this entity can come back into compliance. The second thing is a public reprimand, which is an interesting one. I'm going to be honest about this.
Yeah,
this one's very interesting because all it really does is tell everybody that you've been reprimanded. And if you speak at an event, like if there's a gathering, an annual council type of thing, and you are the president been reprimanded,
right,
then what is done is when it's your turn to speak, you go to speak. And then, but before they say the chair recognizes so-and-so from this union, they have been publicly reprimanded, and that's stated. And
right.
So it's kind of a thing that says, you know, I don't know if it's embarrassment. I don't know if it's just a way to kind of point. I don't know if it's shame. I don't know what it is.
But that's
in essence what it is.
It,
you know, publicly reprimanded. The last thing available, apparently, and I can't verify this because there's different sides of the story, but in essence, there's this idea that that person, if the entity doesn't come into compliance, they can be removed for cause. And so there's two sides. I'm just trying to share what I've heard, that there's like a huge portion of people that say that's not actually possible. They can't do that, especially because people are voted in by their by their constituencies. But then there's also another large portion of people say that they can do that, and they could remove someone if they wanted to. So that's in essence where we're at. And that's why this has become such a big deal, and why this unity video has come out. It's not because like, oh man, we just really like it if you come back. It's like, no, you probably need to come back, or else, you know, there are steps that might be taken after this that won't be so fun. And so that's kind of the reality. I don't know if I've encapsulated that well, but that seems to be the reality.
Yeah. I feel like you have encapsulated everything. It's a big bundle of curls, as my little sister would say.
It's the
big
pickle jar from last episode.
Right.
We're in the juices.
Right. It's a pickle jar. It's crazy.
But then there's that question of like, has this happened before in history? Like in our church history specifically.
Right. Yeah, and I think the answer is yes. I think the answer is totally yes. And Sean, our local history teacher, you're often better at this than me. I mean, I'm just a youth pastor.
Just a youth pastor. Obviously, you know nothing.
So, I mean, the answer is yes, and it's happened, I mean, more than one time. One that I've seen some pastors go back to when they've looked at the issue of women's ordination and just the division in the church between the GC and just other divisions is the 1888 General Conference session. And so this was something that happened in Minneapolis, and it involved a couple different people that were working alongside Ellen White, and also people that were kind of against what Ellen White was trying to push. And it wasn't specifically, what's interesting is Ellen White was not actually the person that instigated this. She was not the one that brought this to the table. It was two guys. One of the guys
Jones
is
Jones and Wagner.
Yeah, Jones and Wagner, A.T. Jones and E.J. Wagner were the
Isn't
name
it
of the
Wagoner?
Guys.
Isn't like Wagoner? Wagoner.
Yeah,
Wagoner?
It's Wagoner.
Yeah.
But these two guys were basically saying that there's a couple issues that they wanted to bring to the table before the GC, and basically say like, hey, I think we need to say there's a couple of changes that might be in order.
And the main thing was the message of righteousness by faith. So like we're not saved by our works, but we're saved by grace through faith, in essence, right?
Yeah, and I mean there were other issues too, and it's really interesting. There's a lot of background on like how it didn't start like there was a divide before this general conference session. So between A.T. Jones and Wagner and the GC, like there was already some history of some division. And a lot of that was leading up to some different opinions on prophecy. So prophecy was super important in our church at that time. And there were actually a lot of strong beliefs at that time that things like the Sunday law and just the end time events, like people were thinking that was going to happen soon. Yeah. Like to the point where people are like, even though the great disappointment helped people realize like, hey, Jesus isn't coming right at this specific time. People were still under the impression like the imminent return meant months or a couple of years. So the idea of like setting up businesses or setting up education systems, a lot of people said, no, don't do it. In fact, the GC for a while said, we're not going to put we're not going to put down schools and other businesses and do those things. Like the only thing we should be doing is preaching the second coming of Jesus. That's going to be happening soon.
So Jones and Wagner, in essence, disagreed with them. And Ellen White, in essence, came down on their side, right? Especially on with the righteous by faith.
Yeah. Yeah. And so that's what happened is basically they started disagreeing with some of the leaders like Uriah Smith and a couple other church leaders and basically saying, hey, we disagree on some of these areas and we want to tell you why. And people like Uriah Smith, who was the president, they kind of disagreed and kind of said, hey, we shouldn't do this. And honestly, on both sides, they became very heated. Like we kind of think of today in politics and people are even saying in our church today, like, oh, we're really not respecting each other. And it's just, there's all this mudslinging go around and that may be true, but even back then, like it's really interesting. The meeting almost began with A.T. Jones basically saying, A.T. Jones basically blurted out in the meeting, basically that Elder Smith didn't know what he was talking about.
He said,
by the way, I do. Don't blame me for what he doesn't know. Like he started the meetings that way. And what Ellen White responded like
that's
Ellen White.
Amazing.
What a
here's
cowboy.
The thing. I mean, not in like a good way. It's just kind of amazing. Like that would have been crazy to be sitting there and just hear all that go down.
Yeah. I mean, we talk today about like what happens in the church and, But I've never heard that. Can you imagine if a pastor or, you know, this guy, A.T. Jones, he was an editor at Signs of the Times, someone of that stature going up in front of church or at a meeting and being like, yeah, this guy knows squat. Like, like he knows nothing.
Wait, so then what did Ellen White say?
Ellen White actually stopped and said, not so sharp, Brother Jones, not so sharp.
Wow.
So,
can you imagine
that was
like in that day and age, just being corrected by a woman? Like,
yeah,
like,
I mean,
like in that day. I get corrected by my wife all the time. We're at a different age, but like in that day and age, it would have been like, oh shoot.
And to be fair, the harsh words were happening on both sides. Like this is, you know, it's easy when you start feeling like you're being treated harshly, it's easy to respond that way. And so that's what happened. That was the spirit of the conference. The general conference then was bad. It was rough.
So you're in essence saying that like even the spirit that of things that we're seeing today is not a new thing like that.
No.
That was even happening at that period of time.
Yeah. No, it was a very, like she was discouraged. She said there was a sarcastic, critical, self-righteous just atmosphere
sides.
There on both sides in a sense. Wow. But she still sided with A.T. Jones and E.J. Wagner. Like she believed
because
that they
because
were.
Because of the theology in essence.
Yeah. Yeah. And she, here's the thing though, like, by the end, though, and again, there's a lot of issues and as part of this conference, just to kind of look at the end, though, she kind of concludes with everything by saying, you know, after everything, whatever side you're on, and this is her exact quote, the Lord desires us all to be learners in the school of Christ. God is presenting to the minds of men divinely appointed precious gems of truth appropriate for our time. God has rescued these truths from the companionship of error and has placed them in their proper framework. And she kind of goes on, but she kind of talks about like, there's all these disagreements and everything. But one thing that's really important is that the spirit of just graciousness and just being loving, it was missing. And that was something that we shouldn't lose when we have these disagreements.
So good.
So this is crazy because like when we look at today, people use Ellen White on either side of the equation. So people are saying like, you need to support the GC, you need to be with the GC. They use all the quotes to support that. And there's people on the other side that in essence say, yeah, but Ellen White was fighting the GC. And I think it's important that we recognize the context of what she says, because she was, I mean, and Sean, correct me if I'm wrong, but she was very supportive of organizing. Of organizing the GC and saying, we need this, we need to be organized as a church. And so a lot of her quotes are used in that way. We need to, and she even, I think, writes to people who are fighting it, because she's like, no, we need this, we need to support this. But then later, after 1888, when the GC in essence takes this, and I think she describes it as kingly power, that's when she starts to really, you know, criticize or write against that attitude in the GC and it becoming that. Because it, in essence, squashed the message of righteousness by faith for the next nearly century, really, which is kind of incredible to me. I don't know. And I think I'm right on that, Sean. But that's the context for her support of the GC, and then her lack of support for the GC is those two things.
Yeah. And I mean, again, like the leaders matter. I know there's a lot of people in our church that feel like, oh, we don't really have any interactions with our leaders, either in the conference or union, or especially in the division. I mean, we don't always have those interactions unless you're like a pastor where you're at those meetings or a teacher at those conferences. If you're just an average church-going member, you may not have those interactions with those people. So you kind of think like, oh, I'm just going to church, whatever. But these things matter. These decisions that are being made and the way they're being done, they matter. And here's what I really want to connect us to with this unity video. I think this is where this connects the most to our past as a church.
Yeah.
This happened, it says, after the meetings on October 24. This is something Ellen White, when she was reflecting on the meetings, she was kind of almost lamenting about what happened and said this was her burden. She said, here's what she said. We want the truth as it is in Jesus. I have seen that precious souls who would have embraced the truth have been turned away from it because of the manner in which the truth has been handled.
Right.
Because Jesus was not in it. That's and so this is what I have been pleading with you for all the time. We want Jesus. The problem wasn't the truth. I mean, there was there were disagreements on prophecy interpretation and a couple other issues during this conference. But the ultimate point was that Jesus was the source of all of our truth and all of our purpose in this life. He should be put above everything else. He should be uplifted. When you think about righteousness by faith, it all comes through Jesus. And so that's what that was her focus. And she's saying, even if you have the truth and you ignore Jesus, we've turned souls away. Precious souls that would have embraced the truth have been turned away because of the way that we presented it. And that's where I want you to think about, it's incredible. If we look at that video, again, we're not criticizing the people, but I want to appeal by saying we need to consider our rhetoric. We need to consider the way that we speak, because it makes a huge difference.
Yeah. Why don't we, I mean, we've kind of done this enlightenment segment where we're talking about the facts, but why don't we actually kind of exit out of that and talk a little bit more about all of this. Now that we kind of have this bird's eye view of all of it, like I'm curious about us looking at all of this in light of what we just talked about.
You want us to go deep.
I want to go deep.
Deep. Let's do it.
One of the things that I want to bring up, because you're talking about this rhetoric and how stuff is presented, Sean, is a couple of the things in the video actually. And even if you haven't watched the video, you could follow along with this. There's a phrase, and I mentioned this earlier, where someone says, you know, but some of us have had a hard time accepting this, in reference to the decision, you know, made at the General Conference in San Antonio. It's said in a very condescending manner.
Yeah.
And it's like, but some of us have had a hard time accepting this. And then there's this huge other thing that I want to bring up about family.
Yeah.
And there's this constant kind of reference back to we're a family, and what do you do when a family decides something and then some people decide to go the opposite direction?
It's gross.
And it's really intriguing to me, because then you have this moment of like, but some of us have had a hard time accepting what our family chose, right? And then it all kind of comes back to me to church organization. Who's the father? Like, who's the mother? Who's the parents in this? Like,
in their metaphor. Yeah.
Well, it feels like the General Conference has, in essence, taken that role. Or maybe if they didn't take it, they've been ascribed that role by certain people and then therefore have just adopted it and said, cool, that's kind of who we are. We're the parents in this. But I'm curious, do you guys have the same impression of that, or am I off, or what?
Yeah, I totally get that impression. I feel like I don't think it's that much of a stretch for, you know, those who support what the GC's actions thus far to, as we're imparting this family metaphor, I don't think it's that much of a stretch to say that, yeah, I think it totally would make sense to ascribe them this sort of parental role of the entire church, even though, you know, that may be questionably biblically. Oh man, words are hard. Questionably biblically. But yeah.
I mean, like, does it make sense to say that the head, I mean, in scripture, the head of the church is Christ. I mean, yeah. It's all it's ever been. But yeah, like I think it really comes back to that, because if the conference in essence is endorsing a message that this video is sending, that we need to be united, we want to invite you back into unity. We, you know, like mm-hmm. we hate, in essence, there's this kind of feeling of, we'd hate to see anything bad happen. And it's not said so much as a threat as much as bad things are going to go down if you don't, you know, and we don't want to see that. There's kind of that feeling of like the parents are going to come someday and they're going to enforce the discipline. Mm-hmm. And it's like, is that really the role of the General Conference? And I'm genuinely asking, not so much trying to mock, because it's, I mean, we got to talk about this. If we don't set this straight as people in our church, like then people just start taking roles, you know,
right.
Like I said, like, I mean, I think the GC has kind of taken that parental role. And if you just take that role, everyone's like, wait, we didn't all agree to that. Like, when did this happen?
Well, it's, I mean, to play devil's advocate, it, like, from a business standpoint and organizational standpoint, it totally makes sense. You know, you have an organization, you have different levels of hierarchy, and then from the top down, you're thinking, huh, my lower levels aren't, you know, in compliance with a decision that we made as a, you know, an organization. So it totally makes sense, you know, from their perspective, as I try and get into, you know, the heads of That's the true, organization sort of thing. But you're right in saying that just that whole idea, like, they're using this framework and this metaphor of family in a way that's really anti-family. Like, it's really like, at least it's not an example of healthy family dynamics, you know?
It doesn't feel like there's much dialogue happening.
Yeah, it's like, well, and Jesse, I think you mentioned this the other day when we were talking about this, like, it's sort of this whole idea that they have, oh no, I just lost my train of thought. It's completely gone. It's 100% gone. It just flew away.
Derailed.
I derailed myself.
Wow, that's impressive.
It happened so fast.
The thought train is gone. No, I mean, Anthony,
I'll try and remember it.
But I know that we've talked before about how, like, families need a dialogue. There's you need to have communication.
Yeah.
And that's the only way a family can work through this.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, oh, there it is. There, booyah! It's back.
The train is back on the tracks.
It's back on the tracks. No, the whole family metaphor just reminds me of my own family. You know, you guys both know there's been a lot of chaos in my family recently. And what I've noticed, you know, as we've tried to navigate the chaos, which I won't get into all the details of it, but just how difficult it is to have honest, open conversations with people you love the most and people in your family. And sometimes it's even harder to have honest conversations with the closest people to you than it is to have conversations with, you know, with friends, you know, trying to explain something to our parents, or trying to, you know, we realize they're not perfect. We realize they're not necessarily, you know, the perfect person that maybe we looked up to our whole lives. And we realize they're human. They're imperfect just like we are. And that maybe there's some things that I sort of have a healthier viewpoint on. And not in an egotistical way, but just in a way that maybe I have things to share. Maybe I have things to offer.
A different perspective, a different idea, yeah.
A different perspective. So I just think when it comes to the whole family metaphor, I think it's just a gross misuse of the metaphor, because they're essentially treating those out of compliance as if they're children in the family metaphor.
Yeah. Yeah.
when in reality, that's not really what it is. It's not really like a parent-children thing. We're all just brothers and sisters in Christ. We're all on the same level. We're all trying to figure this out. And, you know, it's a people with a position, essentially, sort of with a little bit of arrogance, looking down and saying, like, some of us have had a hard time obeying what we, you know, what the decision that was made by leadership. When in reality, it's really just a mischaracterization, I think, of what's happening. So, well, I mean, I just talked a lot, but
well, no. Another phrase, and this kind of goes into it, is there's this phrase that said near the end of the video that, in essence, is this is you can help us fulfill Jesus's call for unity. Now, yeah, in the Garden of Gethsemane, Jesus prays, and he's praying for his disciples. This is in the Book of John, that he prays for his disciples that they might be one, which is right. An amazing thought that here Jesus is about to like die this terrible death. And he's thinking about the unity of his disciples. That's amazing. Right.
That's okay.
And even beyond that, he's hoping that they will be one. And it's kind of that idea that like, you know, and this is something that I found that I was watching one time. I was sitting by a waterfall and a bunch of water is flowing over and it's carved out a ton of rock below,
yeah.
You know, but then all the rocks surrounding it to the sides is just wet because of the mist. I mean, and the whole point to me was that, you know, a lot of water in one direction can make a huge impact while the mist, the stuff that's kind of off on its own, only gets things wet. You know, that's all it does. Oh, and so it's the same thing somewhere. Like, yeah, oh yeah, no, there's some sermons in there. But in essence, meaning that like, if we are one as a people, we can make a much bigger impact than if we're not united.
Oh, right,
but here's the thing though, is when this person says this in this video, it actually made me mad. One of the few things that made me angry.
Yeah.
Because it's a gross misuse. It's spiritual manipulation.
Yeah.
In essence, to say that you want to know how you can fulfill Jesus's last prayer. Agree with my position. It's like, whoa. Okay, that's not the way this. That's not the way this works.
It's classic,
know, like
manipulation.
Wow, that's spiritual manipulation, and it gets me because again, it goes back to this child parent type of thing, and I know that I've experienced in my life sometimes where you think that you're right, and that the other person is entirely wrong, right? And what's crazy is that who is the one who's actually doing the greatest amount of damage in that relationship? Who's the one who's keeping it from reconciliation? It's not the person who you think is wrong. It might be you.
Yeah.
And so that's what kind of bothers me about that phrase is they say that this is how you could help fulfill Jesus's call for unity. And I'm like, but what if it's you? Like, what if you're the one who may need to change? And not to say that like, cause Sean, I'm so glad you brought out a lot of how the spirit on both sides wasn't right back in 1888. And there's a lot of that today too. But my point being is that, yes, maybe it's both of us, but if I'm acknowledging, you know, my heart isn't right. And you're like, it isn't right. You're like, your heart isn't right too. You're like, wait, but you have to acknowledge.
Right. There needs to be a coming together.
You have to acknowledge what you've done to contribute to this lack of unity. And that's a part that I feel like is totally missing in so much of this, just the lack of recognition that, hey, we've contributed in some of the greatest ways. In fact, we may be the greatest contributor to the lack of unity in the Adventist church from the GC. Like they need to say that.
Sean, as I'm watching you listen, you just look dead.
Well, we are recording this right now. Just for those listening, it is 9:42 p.m.
It's true. It's past.
That is
Sean's
way
bedtime.
Past my bedtime.
Sean, you are 74. Like, what in the world?
Of course I am.
He's always been 74.
I'm going to start a retail chain called Forever 74.
Forever 74.
What type of clothes would that store sell, Sean?
Bathrobes. Entirely bathrobes.
And flannel.
Bathrobes and flannel.
And sweatpants that go up to above your breastbone.
Yeah. Just sternum pants. Yeah.
Yes.
Sean, overalls? Sorry. We're totally just derailed.
No.
Sean, what are your thoughts on everything we're talking about?
I think when it all comes down to the just being practical about what's happened, it's not going to help anything for either side to just continue to dig our roots in and say, oh, we're right. And how could they do that? Or how could they do this? So again, the way that we're reacting to the video is not attacking the other side. I think all of us are willing to admit that we all support women's ordination and are not in support of the compliance committees. I don't think any of us have a problem admitting that. Having said that, the issue of the video is not because it's on the other side.
Right.
The
right.
side is not the issue. The issue is the fact that we have a spirit that does not seem in line of biblically or what God would want for us to use for our church as a ministry tool. I think that's what they want this to be. This video is supposed to be a ministry tool.
But wouldn't you say, Sean, and I'm not so much challenging you, it's just kind of asking you for the first time for your opinion on this, but wouldn't you say that at some point, both sides, but I'm saying this about the GC because I think there's more willingness on the other side to do this, but both sides at some point need to say, you know what, I'm going to stop pointing fingers and just accept my part in all of this. Mm. And the reason I'm saying that is it doesn't the GC need to do that too? Not because they're the only ones that are wrong, but doesn't there have to be a moment where they say, yeah, like we have contributed in great ways? Like, would you say that?
I think so. I think it'd be really powerful if the GC would just be willing to, I don't know. Again, when it comes to the being practical about it, setting up some sort of Q&A session, a place mm-hmm. where they can have a classic town hall meeting, you know, where they can just have a discussion about it and maybe even talk about, hey, you know what, they don't even have to admit they're wrong, right? We're not saying that, we're still having this discussion, right? But just at the point where they could say, you know what, there could have been better ways of bringing this up.
Yeah.
There could have been more appropriate ways of talking about this.
Maybe we don't threaten you with, like, you know, losing your job. Maybe like that type of thing too.
I think, no, absolutely. I think there needs to be a better spirit on both sides. And honestly, I think it needs to start with the GC. Mm. They are the leaders of our church.
The positions
they're
of
in
power.
The highest positions of power. And not saying that we don't do everything to be loving and listen to those people, even when we don't agree with them. But it needs to start there, in my opinion. I think there needs to be some initiation on their part for there to be healing.
I totally agree. Because the reality is that the side with more power has to be the one to initiate being the most
abusive.
They have to be the most willing to let go of power and let go and take responsibility. Like, that's what I love about Jesus. And I want to be careful here,
so good.
But like, that's what I love about Jesus is that Jesus does not wait for us but he condescends to us, not in like a condescending way,
right.
But it says that he did not count equality with God something to be grasped, but took the form of a servant. Yeah. Like, that's amazing.
So good.
That Jesus would take that position first and he had all the power. You know, and he's the one who takes that position.
Yeah.
And that's what I wonder about is, you know, if you have a king and a peasant, you know, the peasant can come to the king and say, I'm so sorry, you know, and the king can still have all this power he can lord over this peasant, you know, mm-hmm. type of thing. But if the king is the first one to say, hey, I'm sorry, I messed up, why don't we reconcile this? That's when reconciliation can really happen.
Yeah. Yeah.
Does that make sense?
And just to dovetail on what you guys are saying, I had recently had an experience that I think parallels with this really well. So Abby and I, we just moved recently a couple months ago, and we were living in some apartments, kind of shady apartments, to be honest. And
like, just a lot of trees around, and so you didn't get a lot of sun.
Yeah, a lot of trees, just palm trees.
Shady oaks. Shady.
Yes, that's what it was. No.
Shady oaks in Southern California.
No, it was like, it was not your most high-end apartments. You know, we're poor, we're newlyweds, we're doing our thing, you know? And so... So we're living in these apartments and we recently moved out and I guess we owed some money to them because of damages. I put too many holes in the walls for pictures and it used up all of our security deposit. And so, they call me and the person who calls me, I'm not going to say her name, but she sort of built a relationship with Abby and I over the whole year that we had stayed in the apartment. She was like our go-to person, right? So, you know, I'd go in the office, I'd be like, hey, you know, I have this question, could you help me out? And, you know, like I had her number and she had ours and we would, you know, have conversation. And anytime we had a problem, we would talk to her. And so at the end of us about to move out, she called us and said, hey, I'm so happy for you. And I hope you have a great time in your new house. And, you know, just so you know, here's your final bill, you know, some damages that we found in the apartment. And I was like, oh, great. Sounds good. And so she's like, here's the deadline to pay it. And so it comes up to this week. And the deadline was coming up, and it the deadline has not passed yet, but she calls Abby and she says, hey, you know, just want to give a reminder so you can pay this fee. And we're like, okay, sounds good. We'll pay it. This is what we're going to get it in before the deadline. Literally today I got a phone call from a collections agency that was like, hey, is this Anthony Leiter? I'm like, yeah. They're like, yeah. So just want to let you know, you owe X amount of money, you know, to this apartment complex. And we're like, whoa, what? Like, what happened? Like, we just talked to her yesterday. We're gonna send the check in the mail. Like, you know, we're good to go. And what I found interesting about it, just to come to a conclusion with this, what I found interesting about it was, when you have a relationship with a person, for them to operate in a way that is not relational is hurtful, right? And so in the case of this video, for the, you know, those who are in this video and for the GC, etc., to claim this family metaphor but then act totally contrary to how a family acts, is totally, because when you have a relationship, like, we can just talk about it. Like, you don't need to, she didn't, like, we have the money, we can afford it. She didn't need to send it to collections. And I don't know how it goes. I'm not going to blame her. I'm not saying, you know, I don't know the intricacies of what went down,
but how it feels.
But yeah, but how it feels from our end is like, wow, like, I thought we had a relationship. We've known you for, you know, X amount of time, and you could have, you know, just said, hey, could you pay this? Sure. Like, it's not that big of a deal in that way. And so for them to act as if, for them to claim as if, yeah, we're all family, this is a family thing, but then to have like zero transparency and just act in a power, just make a power move, is really gross. I think it's toxic and unhealthy.
That's a good point, man. I'm curious about, you know, we've talked about this before, but, and we've talked about how, you know, it's easy for us to just kind of ignore it. All of it. We can talk about it on the podcast, and we can talk about it in our circles because it's interesting. It's like, man, what's going to happen next type of thing. Just because, like, that's kind of all you can do. You can almost just, like,
all pastors are nerds and Bible teachers.
We're just to a certain degree, it's like, hey, it's happening. So you soak in the drama because it's like, hey, it's just happening. You know, there's nothing we can do about it. But you know, what does it mean for me if I'm just going to church, if I'm just attending, if I'm leading, if I'm whatever it is in my local church? What does it mean for me to see all this, to, you know, how, I guess maybe the best question is, how can I act differently, or should I act differently in all this?
I would say, when we're just closing off this, for those that feel, you know, frustrated by the response of the GC or this video or the annual council meetings, whatever it may be, my response would be this. If you truly feel convicted about the truths that have been revealed to you, that you believe in women's ordination and these other topics, use it as an opportunity not to take a side and just suddenly start, you know, openly disagreeing and criticizing the people that disagree with you. Use it as an opportunity to prove to the others that it works, that it is aligned biblically with uplifting Jesus and really bringing the kingdom of heaven on earth. And it means you have to pray about it. It means that you have to confront, do I really believe that this is biblical, or is this just a social stance I've taken?
Sean, I'm just going to put, we literally haven't even done this on this podcast. So thanks for calling us out. Yeah. Appreciate that.
Yeah. No problem.
Sean's bringing us to a higher standard. That's why we have him here.
But it's to the point where in my life, there have been enough times where I've been convicted of something and I've been straight up wrong.
Yeah, that's true.
Or there's just something there was an element missing. I may have had a half truth.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. And it's happened enough times that I've realized, if anything, I don't have a problem being wrong. I have a problem if I look back and I was a jerk about it.
Ooh, yeah. Dang.
That's true. Wow.
If I was not loving, if I didn't have a spirit, and I think that's what Ellen White was getting at too, because she saw the dissonance in our church, and it just disrupted things. And like you said, Jesse, it reverberated in our church for possibly decades, maybe even longer than that. Yeah. And so the issue maybe wasn't the truth. And I want to be careful about that, because I think truth is important.
Yeah.
I think you, if you don't have that grounded in your life, then you're going to get into a lot of messy things.
What if unity is less? I need to follow you. Like, truth is important, but what if unity is less about the truth, in some of these smaller places, and it's more about how we love? He says, you're going to know you're my disciples by how you love. Right.
Yeah. Mm. Here's the interesting thing. Like, to know how to love, you need to have the truth. You know what I mean? Mm. So it's kind that's of an good. Interesting, it's an that's interesting good. Thing.
But you would say that the truth is Jesus, right? And so because of that, like, you know, if we love like Jesus, if we serve like Jesus, if we have hearts like Jesus through his spirit changing our hearts, you know, then we can, in essence, that we can treat people differently, even if we disagree in our very core beings. And I think that's what's important to say. That's what you're saying, Sean. But even if we disagree in our very core beings, if the truth is Jesus, then we can disagree, but we can still like care for and love each other.
Smackdown between Jesse and Sean.
No, we need to see it.
Except we agree.
Yeah. No. But here's the thing. And if I'm concluding this, it's we need to realize we're on a journey together. Hmm. And on that journey, we are taking a couple different paths, but we believe as Seventh-day Adventists that we are heading towards the same end destination, which is deeper, richer connection with Jesus that will not just impact our lives now, but in eternity. Yeah. And it's that reality that we're all seeking. And mm-hmm. that's what we have been seeking since our very beginning over 150 years ago. And so when we have these disagreements, my point is we may be branching off on a different path. The question is it worth completely splitting off on our journey and saying that we're no longer on the same journey mm-hmm. on these kind of issues?
Yeah, that's true.
My answer would be no. I think there are some people that would say yes, and people are free to believe that. But I look to the Bible and seeing what Jesus was trying to do. I see what his disciples were trying to do in Acts, and later on what Paul was trying to do by trying to get people in the right mindset for what it meant to be in Christ, mm-hmm. what it meant to be a believer,
and
to be a follower of Jesus. And it all comes down to not necessarily every little detail and the way that you practice things. It comes down to your spirit of surrender and mm-hmm. your willingness to work with each other and just the messiness of the gospel, the messiness of the church.
That's good.
We need to do that together. Even if for the most liberal and conservative people should be able to come together in our church and to work together, even in the messiness.
Yeah, man, that's good, Sean. Those are really good. Hey, Anthony, what do you think?
So on a practical level, day to day, as a youth pastor, if any of my youth are listening to this, hi guys. I just believe so strongly in what Sean said, like just continuing day to day, following Jesus in the best of my ability. And when conversations like these come up, trying to point towards and ask the questions like, is this uplifting Jesus? And are we following in the way of the gospel in this video? And is it possible for me to identify as an Adventist and not agree with that, which I think it is, and say, I'm an Adventist and I'm for a healthy, open, honest conversation, instead of manipulative passive aggression, you know? So man, it's easy for me to get caught in the weeds of my own thoughts. So maybe I'll just leave it there and say that mm-hmm. I think I'm still just trying to figure it out and follow Jesus. What about you?
I think Sean said most of it really well. But I think like the main reason that I would ever think about splitting off from the Adventist church isn't because of any of these issues. It's mostly because if Sean is still a part of it, that's why I would split off from the Adventist church. No, practically. Sorry, Sean.
We really do love each other. Yeah. I just, that's for those that have asked. It's a painful kind of love.
Speak for yourself.
Love language is ridicule. So
sixth. Yeah.
The sixth no, language. Yeah.
I don't know. I think honestly for myself, and I want to make this succinct, is if I love Jesus, then how I treat people is more important than what I theologically get correct. And that, I know that sounds scary for some people, but if Jesus literally said, he never said, they will know you're my disciples by what you believe. They will know that you're my disciples by how you love. And if that's the case, then that is what it's called, what we're called to do. And it's hard because I think I even have to check my own heart having some of these conversations, just being like, man, am I treating even the people I disagree with in love? Bad. You know, and it's hard because it's like when you're far away, it's easy to just be like to ridicule and to like, that was ridiculous. And I do think that like with this video and with some of the things that the GC do, I think that I have to call it out, because if I don't, and if other people don't, it just kind of passes off as like, oh, this is okay. And it's not okay. But that being said, is I don't think that any of us are sitting here like, no, we don't love, we wouldn't love for this to be different. We wouldn't love for this to be healed and for the rift to be gone. So I think that that's what it comes down to. And if you got people in your church that are fighting, you know, then I think Jesus called us to be peacemakers and to be people who bring the ministry of reconciliation to the world around us. And so that is our call, whether we like it or not. That's my role, is to be a peacemaker and to bring people into harmony, into unity. But not of belief necessarily, except for the fact that they're both created in the image of Jesus. And so, yeah, that's all I can really say.
All right, everyone. Thank you so much again for listening to another episode of Seeking What They Sought. We just wanted to point out to you guys, feel free to check out our show notes. We usually post sources in there, as well as I think in this episode, we also put the link to the video that we'd been discussing. Once again, we want to thank our Grammy Award winning producer, Eric T-Dog Edstrom, and just want to thank him for his hard work. And we love you. All right. Thank you so much for listening once again, and we'll see you next time. Bye.